listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
It's a high-speed edition of The Dan Nichols Show this week as a guest joins me who I have something in common with because his best time for the 200 metres is exactly the same as my best time for the 100 metres. Slight difference in our speed across the turf, but a shared love of sport, a shared love of sport for good, a shared love for three stripes. He is quite comfortably the greatest sprinter South Africa has ever produced and one who annoyingly absolutely refuses to get any older. I suspect my grandchildren will still be watching him at Olympic Games in years to come. A very warm welcome, Akani Simbine.
What an intro. Great to be here. Thank you.
My brother-in-law is a dermatologist, Dr. Fotis Kouvelakis, celebrity dermatologist to the stars. I think you might secretly be seeing him because every time we see each other, and it's not uncommon to see each other, You do seem to just get that little bit younger. It's a bit suspicious, Akani.
I think before we came on, I think I said to I'm the human definition of fine wine, so let's leave it at that.
And yet, you strike me as somebody who, for everything you do and all the extraordinary success you've had, you do somehow manage to strike a bit of balance in life. Last time we bumped into you was at the Soweto Derby or off the football for the day. Before that, it was at, I think we saw each other at Sivengezi's new restaurant launch. So you do get out and about a bit. There is a bit of balance. It's not just train, gym, and eat boiled chicken breasts.
Yeah, 100%. I think in the beginning of the sport, I used to think, now I need to be like that fully focused sprinter that just goes to training and goes home, chills, does nothing. And I found a balance in life, found a balance of how I can do things. I find myself outside. We see each other often outside and also have other things that I'm doing outside of just being a sportsman. I think just being able to balance yourself and do things outside of the sport helps you mentally because you can't just be thinking about track every day. That's a bit insane to me.
Of course, you have experience in not just thinking about track every day because this really is your second choice of career. Because if it had gone according to plan, it would have been Akani Simbine, the footballer I'd be talking to today.
Yes, it'd be the footballer. Maybe I would be playing at Chelsea right now,
Now, you say that slightly flippantly, but you were a very, very good young footballer. How far did you go? How close to maybe going into football properly were you?
So at 16, I was playing in the Castle League. This was way back, Castle League, if people don't know, was the league under the Premier League, and at 16, I was playing for a team there and I was on my way to going to the PSL. And then the whole plan was to do PSL for a couple of years and go try do trials somewhere else overseas and then make my way into Europe. But yeah, I think I would rate myself, I was pretty good.
But was the problem that you kept being blown for offside because you'd beaten the offside trap, but the human eye was not fast enough to realise that it wasn't right?
Yeah, I think I kept shocking the referee the whole time. The referee didn't understand. That time we didn't have VAR. So the referee was like, no way this guy got this that quickly. No, offside.
You could have gone into football. I suspect you would have done rather well, but it wasn't the worst career choice to head into track instead. How did that come about? How did Akani decide, right, football, I'm going to have to say goodbye. It's not you, it's me. I'm going to run very fast instead for a living.
So I found myself on the track because my high school principal forced me to actually run. So he was like, I see you fast on the football field and I hear everybody saying you're fast. You need to come run for the school. I was like, no, man, I don't want to run. That's not for me. I don't even want to know what running is going to do for me. I have a plan for football. I'm going to stay with it. Then he said, if you don't run for the school, I'm not going to let you play for the school. And I was like, okay, fine. Let me just run. Ran, broke all the school records. And they're like, oh, you're actually pretty fast. You should go try to get a coach. I was like, man, that's
I'm not a footballer.
I'm a footballer. That's the cool thing to do. Got to matric. Then in matric, how moms are and parents are. You need to focus. You need to pass. It's matric, and everything. And when I sat down with my parents and my parents said, okay, it's time for you to choose a sport. You can't just do both. Because I was doing club soccer, club athletics, and then school soccer, school athletics. So it was a lot. And then my mom said, you need to choose. And then literally woke up the next morning, said, okay, I'm going to quit soccer and run. But that was just off of nothing. Like my mom literally just said to me the night before, like with athletics, if you cross the line first, it's you. With soccer, the coach has to love you. Everybody has to favor you for you to get to play. And sometimes you might not get to play, you might not get to show your talent. So this pathway that you have for yourself might not happen. With track, you have more control. Woke up the next morning, I'm like, okay, I want the control. So
let me see. It was as simple as that.
Yeah. Let me see. I miss playing football, you know. I literally miss it, but I don't regret just like giving up on my dream, you know, because I actually found where I was supposed to be and I found my path and I actually found a dream that I actually love. You know, I had to build a dream into athletics.
I love that you've basically swapped one for another,
yeah. But
I think discovered the one that was always meant to be. What was the breakthrough moment in terms of realizing that, yep, I think this was the right decision?
The following year, I got chosen to go to Zambia to represent South Africa. Now, this is the first time I'm even leaving the continent. I'm leaving the country. And when I'm leaving the country, it's the first time I'm going to the airport. It's the first time I'm getting a passport. So I was just like mind blown at that point. It was like, bro, I'm like, athletics is taking me to these things. And soccer didn't do that for me. So that was one. Got to Zambia, broke the SA junior record. It was at 10-3 at that point. Now I broke it to 10-1.
That's not a small jump in sprinting terms.
Yeah, it's a 0.2 of a second in sprinting terms. It's pretty big. And when I did that, that's when I got to qualify for the World Championships to go to World Champs in Moscow in 2013. And that's, I went to Moscow, got to see Usain Bolt, got to race against Justin Gatlin and all these guys. But I got to see the world of athletics. And that sold it for me. And the fact that I could travel and someone would pay for me to travel and see the world, hey, why not?
Given your relatively late decision to move into athletics and give up on losing at Stamford Bridge on a regular basis, you're surrounded by all of these athletic icons. Mm. How much of a thrill was that? Did you know exactly who they were? Were you a bit starstruck, or was athletics not yet imprinted enough on you to have that effect?
I wasn't a fan of the sport. I didn't know who the stars were. You know, I heard about Usain Bolt. I heard about Jordan Blake. I heard about Asafa Powell. But these are people I'd heard of. You know, they weren't like...
They're just random guys asking you for selfies.
I wish. I heard, like, these are guys are just... They said these are guys the fastest men in the world. And now I'm dabbling in this sport, you know, trying to figure out what it's about, how to do it, and all these things. And here I am, just looking at them, be like, okay, these are just people, you know, okay. But everybody's going crazy over them. Then I saw what happened in Moscow. Then I was like, okay, this is actually a crazy thing. Now I started doing my research. Now I started looking back into athletics. I start seeing 2012 Olympics. I start seeing 2011. And I see 2008 when Usain Bolt broke the record. And I'm going back into the Ben Johnson era. And I'm like, okay, this is actually pretty, pretty cool. You know, being the fastest man in the world is actually a cool thing to do. Now I'm getting invested. Now I'm wanting to be a better sprinter and a better athlete.
The journey up until that point had been relatively straightforward. Akani wakes up one morning and over his Weet-Bix tells his mum he's giving up football. He's suddenly breaking school records. He's racing the country. You're in Moscow. How much did that first big international event place your own talent and your own success to date in context?
Ooh, Dan, if I had to tell you, like, I literally got knocked out in the first round. And I remember I was in the heat with Justin Gatlin. There was Kirsten Bledman there and these other guys. But at that time, it was the ego era, you know, the era with guys trying to like intimidate you and stuff. And I'm just this soccer kid that came into the sport. And now I'm looking at these guys just saying, huh, to me and all that, making these sounds. I'm just like, I don't understand what you guys are doing, but it's not okay, you know? And I started understanding why they do it and just trying to figure out, okay, this is a sport that I'm in now. I need to figure out why the professionals do this and how they do this and how they become faster and what they do to become faster. And then you start building a love, and then you start building the actual interest into it. And 2013 for me, like, was an eye-opener because I lost by a big gap. But at the same time, I saw how I can get faster and how I can get better in the sport. And that for me was like the thing, because I was always a kid that wanted to learn and always wanted to grow. So I got into a space where I was saying, okay, I'm not too bad at this thing, but if I learn and I apply myself and I open myself to becoming better, it should work out.
That learning experience is fascinating for me, because if I look at just about any other sport, If I'm a cricketer, I can improve my cover drive because of the technical application. Mm. If I'm playing rugby, I can work on the low and out jumping to ensure I get the ball more often than I don't. Whereas sprinting, well, you're fast and either you are or you're not. Yeah. And yet there is so much minute technical detail that I suspect you probably weren't aware of that early in your career, mm-hmm. that you had to learn what you didn't know and then start to learn it.
Yeah, I had to unlearn things from just soccer, you know, just getting up and running, you know, and then relearn, okay, what it is to drive, what it is to accelerate, what it is to get out the blocks, what it is to transition in, have your transition phase, what it is to get up to top speed, how long can I hold my top speed for, the technique of running. There's so many little bits that actually make us perform the way we do perform. So that was the frustrating part, because I came into the sport thinking, oh, I'm fast, you know, and then I got beat and I'm like, ugh, I'm not that fast, but I need to learn how they run so I can get faster, you know. So it's everybody, when I try to explain running or the 100 meters to people, I always say, just imagine what a plane does when it lifts off. That's what we do when we run. You know, you try to get as much power as you can in the beginning of the race, and you just build it up, and get faster and faster. But to be able to do that, you need to be training. You need to be working on the technique. You need to be working on the speed. You need to work in the gym, doing as much as you can to actually get better.
I'm looking later this year to finally break the 19-second mark over the 100. I'm very confident. I'm working hard at it. For young athletes like myself, but also those who might be listening, we often have parents who get in touch with the show because they've got a kid who is a young prodigy in the field in which our guest has excelled. What would your words of encouragement to either an aspiring young sprinter or the parents of a young sprinting hopeful be?
Don't try to be a professional too early. Be a kid. If you have a kid that has the talent, let them be a kid. You know, I think a lot of parents try so hard to professionalize their kids so early in life. And I feel like when you professionalize your kid and say, okay, you just need to run, that's all you do, they don't learn other skills. They don't learn other things. And other sports teach you different skills. And I think for me, my longevity in the sport came from that. You know, I was doing every single sport. Each term, there was a sport that I was doing, you know. So, yeah, man, don't try to professionalize so early in life. Do as much sport as you can as a kid. Explore, have fun with it. I think one thing we forget is to have fun, and one thing we forget that sport is actually entertainment and it's fun. And if you take away the money and the TV and everything, if you're just going to hang around with your friends and just hit a cricket ball, you guys are just playing, you know, so play with it. But yeah, man, just keep it going. Keep believing in the dream, but also be able to just expand yourself and just do other things, because you can't just sit in the one space and say, no, I'm going to professionalize when I'm just 12 years old. What do you know about professionalizing when you're still growing?
I think the flip side of that, though, is my parents probably left it a bit late in terms of my sprinting career. Yeah. But there are two sides to that particular scale. Going back to this journey, and you've discovered very suddenly, very quickly, very vividly, there's some pretty quick guys out here, and I might have been the superstar back home, but I'm pretty far down the pecking order for now. When does that start to change? When does the self-belief settle in that says, you know what, Akani Simbine, you're not just here to get some autographs and be able to stand close to some of the biggest names. You now are one of the biggest names.
2016, when I made the Olympic final, after that, like, my life changed. Like, it literally became, you're one of the fastest men in the world, the fifth fastest men in the world.
With a time that would have won the Olympic gold 4 years earlier.
100%, you know, and it's like, to me, it's just crazy, because it's like, I always say that I didn't picture this. I didn't envision this. I didn't plan this career. I didn't think of it, of being like this, you know. And I'm making an Olympic final, and that's someone's dream, but I'm just here, just running, and I'm here, you know. And at that point, when I become one of the first South Africans to make Olympic finals in the last 100 years, and it's like, okay, you actually did something really crazy. Now start believing in yourself. Now start saying, okay, if I finish fifth and Usain Bolt is just in front of me, I'm really that close. So let me train harder. Let me get faster. Let me get better. And that's when now I start saying to myself, okay, yeah, you actually have something. Let's work on it. Let's get better.
One of the accidents of birth for you was that, much like a golfer playing in the prime of Tiger, much like a tennis player trying to take on Rafa, Novak and Roger, like a swimmer in the era of Michael Phelps or a tennis player in the era of Venus Williams and Serena Williams, you just happen to be at a time where Usain Bolt, as the greatest ever, was headlining, but also a lot of other extraordinary talent. And so to be in the top five in Rio, I think people don't always appreciate just what a staggering achievement that was.
Yeah, 100%. I think people don't understand that out of the population of the world, getting to the Olympic Games, you are 0.0001 of the population in the world. You know, that's already...
Because the tickets are very hard to come by.
100%, you know. And you are an elite part of the world that gets to go to the Olympic Games, you know. And I only learned that 2021, you know, that, okay, this is actually a serious thing like this, you know. And you get to that and you see that, okay, like we are actually part of an elite class of athletes. But getting there is not easy. You know, a lot of guys get there and they think, oh, yeah, I'm just going to show up and do what I need to do. But it's not like that, you know. And it's you become a special breed, man. Like being an Olympian is not just anything. And making an Olympic final is not just anything. You know, now that even cuts down to 0.0000001 of the population of the world, that you are the fifth fastest man in the world. Like that's... It's insane. There's how many billion people in the world and you're number five. That's wild.
And of course, since then, there have been many occasions when you've been the fastest man in the world. You've taken on everybody and they've all been watching the back of you over the course of 100 meters. But for them, as for you, it is a particularly capricious sport because you've got 9-point-something seconds or thereabouts to justify the work that has been going in for days and weeks and months and in some cases years. How mentally do you approach the fact that it can take one tiny little thing going wrong? You just slightly misjudge that start or you don't quite hit your stride as you want to, and all of a sudden first in 9.9 becomes sixth in 10.1 and suddenly your whole day has changed and retrospectively those weeks and months have changed.
Yeah, that's the cutthroat part of our sport, you know. You can false start, prepare for 4 years and false start in the Olympic final. Doesn't count. You false started. And you can be in the shape of your life and come to the World Champs final, Olympic final, and then it just doesn't add up, just doesn't get together in the final, you know, doesn't come together. You end up running 10-1, as you say, you know, and you know that you were in 9-8 shape 2 weeks back. You just step on the track, 9-8, 9-7, easy. Now you get to the final, 10-1, you know. And the crazy thing about a sport is that you have one chance. You can't be still in the same race or in the same game and do it again. And especially in 100 meters, it's so quick. And you don't have time to think about things. You don't have time to change things. You don't have an opportunity or a second opportunity to fix a mistake. If you make a mistake in 100 meters, the race is gone. That's how it is and that's how it's always going to be.
It really is not a forgiving space. No. And there's no sentiment to professional sport generally, but particularly with the 100 meters. And yet you have seen more of the good times than the bad, and it has given you so much. And it seems to have kind of ticked all of the boxes. You've done just about everything there is to do in the sport, and yet you still continue, you still go, you break 100 under the 10-second mark time and again. Where does that motivation come from? And are there mornings when even the great Akani Simbine wakes up and thinks, you know what, I'd actually just like to sit on the sofa and watch Netflix today and smash a pizza?
I think of that every day, man. Every day I'm just like, oh, I got to go train. This is going to be a tough session. I know coaches, whatever is planned for me, it's going to put me in the ground, but it's okay. You know, let's just get up and go. But at the same time, it's like, for me, it's, I start every season fresh. Like I started with more of, okay, Akane, now we go again. You know, it's a new season. Start again, start fresh. This is time for you to learn again, time for you to grow again. Let's go. I think that's one of the tricks that I have. Like, I don't add my seasons up. One season goes, a year goes, and I start again. Another season goes, and I start again. So I think that gives me that longevity and the sense of fear that, okay, I can keep on going and keep on doing this thing and I'll be fine.
That, though, I don't think would be enough motivation to keep going, just that I, right, let me just do another season. So what is it out there that is still sitting on the horizon that you are still reaching for, that is still compelling you to get out and to train and to push and to continue to prove yourself?
The fact that I just want to be faster, and I believe I can be faster, and I believe I can be an Olympic champion, a world champion, and I can believe I can take my African record back, you know, and these are things that goals that I have for myself and goals that I want to achieve, you know, but at the same time, they are moments that I don't want to take and say these define who I am, you know. I've had a very successful career, you know, out of a kid that didn't know anything about the sport, and here I am as one of the fastest men in history. Hey, man, everything else is just a cherry on top, you know. So I think for me, that's why it's like I appreciate the moments. I appreciate the wins. I appreciate the losses. And I appreciate the experiences I get, because I would never have dreamt of this, you know. So I'm living a dream, you know, but it's blessings. And, you know, I'm just grateful for everything that has come to me. I'm grateful to God for actually giving me this life. And, yeah, man, I just want to be better, and I just use the opportunity of running to actually do better and be better.
We embrace the highs with gratitude. We learn from the lows as much as we dislike the experience of going through them. Mm. What has the lowest point been in the career?
20 Tokyo Olympics. I came into it like I was a house on fire, man. Like, I knew that I was in like my greatest shape, and it didn't work out. I came fourth again, you know, and that to me was like, in my head, I was playing this thing of, you're just making fourth. You're always going to just miss out. You're always the fourth guy. You're always the fourth guy. And I fell into depression, you know, and that was like when I just started like going downhill, you know, and I wanted to quit the sport and leave the sport. And I went back to this thing of saying to myself, you know, I shouldn't have even been in the sport. Like, I was good playing soccer. Like, that's fine. Now I'm in the sport. Now I get disappointed like this, and now I'm in depression. Like, what's the point, you know? And then I went to therapy, and then I developed a new way of looking at things, a new way of looking at life, and not letting myself be defined by the sport that I do, but letting Akane be Akane. You know, I just run. You know, that's something I do. But me as me, I am who I am and who I believe I am to be. You know, but I'm not the definition of the sport, and I'm not my accomplishments. I'm not my disappointments. And that gave me power, because after that, I started enjoying the sport more. You know, I started getting to a point where I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to go run. You know, I'm going to go race. That's cool. I'm going to London to go race. Hey, man, vibes, let's go. You know, and not that I'm like not taking it seriously, but I am taking it seriously. But I'm just secured in who I am first, and making myself as Akane happy first. And then afterwards, hey, let's go run, let's go have fun with it and just get better with it.
It's a huge thing to be able to do. You're certainly not the first, and certainly you won't be the last athlete to suffer from, I am defined by the sporting success I've had. And because that's what the world sees. Mm. They see you in bursts of 10 seconds, and that can't be who you are. But it can be really difficult to separate those. And I think, as well as you've done on the track, that's probably one of your greatest achievements.
Yeah, man, I think it's difficult to separate, because everyone around you tells you to focus on the sport, and you need to, in order to get better, for you to get better, you need to be fully focused, you know, on the sport and what you're trying to do. But at the same time, you get caught in this bubble and this trap of, I am the sport, you know. And when you're in that bubble, it's like everything works around you to make you perform, but then you forget to work on you as the human, and you get lost in that system. And then once reality hits you, you have nothing that kind of secures you as like as a person and as a human. So that's when I think a lot of sportsmen like start going crazy and losing themselves, because it's like the bubble pops and now you're starting to see the real world and how the real world is, and now you've got to figure out like who you are in the real world, and not just this bubble that is fake for 10 years of your life.
Which is why the latest addition to the Akani Simbine landscape is such an important one. The creation of a legacy beyond just your personal time on the track, and also a sense of purpose that goes beyond running faster than anybody else on earth. And that is this new event that you have launched. I know it's been planned for a long time. I know it's something you're very, very passionate about. Talk us through how this came to be and what we can look forward to.
So we're hosting the Simbine Classic in Pretoria, Tshwane, Pilgrimage on the 28th of April. But then this just didn't come about just out of thin air, you know. My company and I have been hosting competitions during the South African season. Every year we'll host two competitions called the Shootouts, where we'll take senior athletes and then just have a competition at a school meet. And it grew to a point where now the big school meets say, okay, can you please have a shootout by us? Can you please have a shootout by us? And the whole idea was that I needed the younger athletes to see the guys that they idolize, the guys that they see and want to be like, because they needed to see like it's actually a real thing, not to be imagining someone that is overseas and someone they cannot touch and not even have access to. So now with what we were doing, we were putting them in one space and putting them on the track to race on the track that the kids are running on. So the kids can see it, that this person ran here. I saw him. I was warming up with him, Nana. I could take a picture with him, Nana, and I saw his warm up. I can do what he's doing. So it keeps a belief in it. And it grew to a point where we had Letsi Letaboho come here. He broke the world record in the 300 meter at our competition. Then World Athletics was like, okay, we see what you've been doing. Would you be keen on doing this? This is a product of ours. Would you be keen on doing it in South Africa? First time ever in South Africa. Are you available? This was in October. I was like, short notice, but let's go.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen, you know. And I've just been like, it's a new space because it's like a titan. Like, I've never had to plan such a big event like this, you know. But I'm doing it because of the fact that we're trying to uplift South African athletics. But at the same time, we're bringing international athletes here to come run in South Africa for the first time ever. Like, we don't have a meet in South Africa that is part of the world tour that like forces the athletes to come run here in South Africa to gain points for world athletics, to qualify for championships. We don't have that. Now we have that. And we have the opportunity to get our athletes to qualify here in South Africa and people like me to actually run in front of our home fans against the people we run against overseas here in South Africa. You know, we've never had that. And it's such a great thing and such a great feeling to be able to say, I'm going to gain world athletics points, ranking points in front of my family. I'm going to beat whoever is coming from wherever in front of my family. That's so powerful, you know. And at the same time, I'm not trying to focus the meet on the elites. It's about the kids, because we still have a kids program in the beginning of the program where the kids become the stars. The kids get to run on the track. They get the bibs like us. They get their names on the boards, on the screens like us. The TV's on them. Like us, you know, and it's still keeping that idea of making sure the kids can actually feel and touch and see the reality of this actually something I can do and I can be interested in and I will be able to achieve it, you know. So yeah, man, it's going to be an exciting day, long day, but a fruitful day, man, where we will be inspiring kids in the next generation, but we will be having international athletes running in South Africa. But at the same time, the kids are the stars of the day. We are just secondary.
I love the excitement shining through on your face. It is so good to see. Remind us where this is happening, when it is happening, and how we can get involved, come and watch, in my case, possibly participate.
Dan, I'll give you a lane in the kids.
I just imagine this. Dan gets beaten by a 6-year-old on crutches.
Hey, that'll be so bad, but I can give you a lane there. The meet is happening on the 28th of April, Tshwane Pilgrimage Stadium. Tickets are going to go live Friday, which is this week, Friday. And yeah, man, just follow us on Instagram. You can just follow my Instagram page or the Simbine Classic Instagram page, and all information will go out there. It's going to be online ticket sales. We're trying to fill up the Pildic Stadium, 22,000 people, and I believe we can do it. You know, let everybody come see what it's like to run on the world tour. You know, let's do it here in South Africa, and let's give the internationals a South African feel. So yeah, man, 28th of April, Pildic Stadium. Let's do it.
I absolutely love it. And I'm not surprised at all for the obvious reason and that, well, you are our greatest sprinter ever and it's a very natural event for you to be fronting. But also one of the places you and I have spent so much time together is Laureus and mm-hmm. that Sport for Good space. We are both ambassadors. We've both seen the work that Laureus does around the world, not just here in South Africa. And it's one of those great rewards we get where we see a space that obviously in very different ways has given us so much through our lives, mm-hmm. putting back into these communities, young people, as they will at your event, getting the chance to have a glimpse of a better future through sport.
Yeah, 100%. I think sport is the crux of everything. You know, sport is used to do good, always. You know, and for us, you know, being an ambassador, you're able to see what sport can do for different kids and different environments and how many kids' lives get changed through sport, you know. And I always say that, you know, we don't have to be developing the next Siya Kolisi, the next Akani Simbine, the next Wade van Niekerk. It's just using sport to give a kid an opportunity to be outside, to go outside and have fun, to use their bodies, you know, and to grow in sport and learn different skills and learn different attributes, you know, and impact it in their lives and however they want to see their futures, you know. And at Laureus, we're doing that, you know, and we're changing kids' lives through sport, you know, and we're giving them opportunity to be sports people, but they don't have to become professional sports people, but, you know, enjoy sport and grow in the sport. So it's a very impactful thing that we're doing, and I'm always great to be using sport as a vehicle, you know. For me, sport has been a vehicle to get an education, and with my foundation, that's the whole thing. We're using athletics to get these kids a better education, better spaces to go schooling, and give them the opportunity to learn, to become better, to get degrees, you know, to get matric certificates, you know, to get jobs as well, you know. So it's a very important tool, and hey man, it's there for us to use, and we should use it.
Well, you are a great supporter and a great champion of that very space. Also a great champion of that space is the global patron, IWC. I have a long-standing relationship, one I'm very fond of, very proud of. And that links as a final parting shot for another shared interest of ours. You also quite like watches. You've got a different brand. They're some of the world's most striking watches. And because of your enormous success, you have a number of these adorning your wrist, most of which I think cost the GDP of Belgium. tell me about the Richard Mille story.
So, yes, as Dan has just told everybody, I have a couple of Richard Mills, but that's like, you know, we've had a really great relationship since 2018. And yeah, man, they allow me to wear their watches and allow me to have their watches. And like, it's crazy to me that I sit around with a couple million on my wrist and it's like, okay, what are you doing? You know, so me, it's like just mind blowing because it just doesn't make sense, you know, that I am doing this thing. I have this thing. And yeah, man, I'm wearing one today, but
I think it's important to note, and I can say this as both your friend and somebody who's known you for a long time, you're not a flashy guy. You're not that kind of guy who's, you know, stepping out of your third Ferrari in fur at a club at 3 a.m. with bling dripping everywhere. Yeah. But this is a really natural and organic brand story where it's grown up through a partnership rather than, let me show off to the world something cool.
Yeah, man, the RM family is not about showing off. Their watches are expensive, yes, but they're not about showing off. They are very about who you are as a person, or you're a genuine person, or you're a person that they can connect with as a human on a human level. You know, I literally had dinner with them. I had dinner with Richard. And then the following day, he said, okay, come be part of the family. You know, sent us a contract, a one pager, and said, come be part of the family. That's how it was. And we have become a family. You know, we've become a family of this superstars there, but when you're sitting like at a table with them, they're just normal humans, you know. And it's that's how they sign and that's how they work with you. And it, I'm grateful to be part of their family. I'm grateful to be part of a family that is not about the flashiness of things. You know, I'm not, as you said, I'm not a flashy guy. Like, hey, man, I'm just me.
If you are listening instead of watching, Kanye, of course, is wearing a suit made of pure leather with ivory trimmings. No, he's not. He's in a standard Adidas. Which, Kate Woods will be very happy with the choice of wardrobe. We've spoken a lot about the achievements on the track and the fact that you have got to a stage in your life where Kanye, the sprinter, does not define Akani, the person, as big a part of you as it may be, but it is still what most of the world sees you for.
Yeah.
And we have watched moments and cheered and yelled support and been immensely proud at what you've given us as South Africans. But I wonder, in closing, of all of the races that you have run, and gee, there have been enough of them, is there one above all others, perhaps one we might not be expecting, that you look back on and that, for some particular reason, still gives you goosebumps, still gives you an immense fondness in summing up what this sport has meant to you?
Well, I think it's the race in 2012 when I broke the SA Junior record, because without that race and running that time, I don't think I'd be here today. So, and it's a race that I always go back to. I'll probably watch that race like, you know, a couple of times a year. Because it just takes me back to me being a kid that just came into the sport and didn't know much about the sport. And here I'm breaking an SA Junior record. And after this, I'm getting a shoe contract deal. After that, I'm getting on a plane to go race in Italy. After that, I'm going to Moscow to race against Usain Bolt. So like, it's like, if I didn't have that race, none of this would have been happening, you know? So always go back to that. And I there's a video of it where like the commentator says, "Oh, look at Simini, look at Simini, look at how he goes the whole time," you know, and I always like smile at that because it's such a surreal moment for me.
I love that that's the one that you've picked. It's such a formative tale and one that justifiably comes with so much pride. Kanye, thank you so much. Yes, because of your decision, Chelsea are now struggling to make it into Europe next season. But the flip side is that South Africa has got not just one of its great sprinters, but I think we can say very comfortably one of the greatest athletes we've ever had. And that's off the field as well as on it. So thank you for that. Good luck with the Akani Classic. And do persevere, because I really think you're going to come into your own at the 2042 Bulawayo Olympics. I'm seeing that one shape up quite nicely. But do keep going. I deliberately haven't asked you when the horizon is, because I think it's still some way off. But as long as you're enjoying it, I think the speed will come with that enjoyment, and keep giving us so much pleasure.
Blessings. Thank you, Dan. I'm 2043. I guess I'll see you guys there.
He is one of the modern greats, not just South African, but around the world. He has blitzed tracks all over the planet. But as good a sprinter as he is and will continue to be for some time, it is Akani, the person, who takes first prize. But I think you will have worked that out by now. My very special guest on The Dan Nicholls Show this week. We'll see him at that Akani Classic. It's Akani Simbine.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.